Hi, it's Bill Teeple, Donna Coble, Alan Cobb, and here we are. It's Icon Art Radio. In our last show, we broached the subject of the relationship of love and beauty, and feeling that these components were essential to what art is all about, and what we're getting out of art, and what we're putting into art. But I think Alan had a commentary or a question to raise in the, on this front.
Well, it's sort of a question. I'd be willing to take a stab at an answer too. But the question that sort of comes to mind is, in looking at a lot of contemporary art and thinking, you know, love and beauty. Wait a minute, I don't see any love and beauty here. I mean, obviously, some people, you know, can walk into a gallery and look at a painting that's soft, pleasant colors and say to themselves, well, that's soft and pleasant, but it's not what I would call beautiful, and it doesn't do anything for me. But then at the extreme, you know, there are people building sculptures out of garbage. And I don't mean found objects, I mean real garbage that just sits there and kind of smells bad, and you know, you see it in the gallery and you marvel that they would even allow it in the building.
Or is maybe offensive to some segment of the population.
Yeah, potentially very offensive. And so the question then is, where's the beauty and love, you know, in something like that?
We all look at Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
Well, I'm the one that started all this last time.
Love and beauty, man.
I think that the artist wouldn't, unless the artist is just like trying to force his ego onto the world, and just it's all just trying to get a rise out of people and to get attention. All these very surface reasons that will make his work not last and him not get what he really wants. But I think that a serious artist that's been coming to this point and maybe spending many, many years producing a certain kind of work, especially if he's not really getting, I mean, if he's gotten rich doing it, there's another motivation. But if he's like devoted to this kind of work, he has to feel in some way that it's beautiful. Maybe he's pulling the rug out from under some kind of like boxed in, crystallized notion about reality, and that he's, when he pulls the rug out from under that or makes some statement that pokes holes in this balloon of these other people's reality, it's going to upset a lot of people. But I think he probably gets some sense of beauty out of the revealing of some underlying, you know, reality behind that illusion.
Yeah.
Well, and he may be doing it out of love for some bigger cause, like love of the survival of the planet or something, and he's making this sculpture out of the garbage to put people's attention on how many mountains of garbage, you know, there are mountains of garbage are being generated every single day all over the entire planet, and what does this mean? And so I think there's a lot of that kind of art being produced nowadays that rattles people who don't want to have that kind of responsibility for the planet, but also reminds other people what a dear thing this is, our Earth, and our that we're all caretakers of it, and that this work of art points the finger right at the mistakes that people are making. So that can be a love, an act of love. May not have so much to do with beauty other than preserving the
beauty. Well, I think beauty,
my
point that I made in the last show was that beauty has to be in there. But beauty, like with an agreed upon definition of what that's to look like, I think that's what we're raising today. It's not necessarily what we might, there isn't just a small category of beautiful things and beautiful art. Beauty is when truth is made manifest. And I think time, some of this, only time will tell of its value. Value is something we can't really put on it, or even what beauty is in there. The artist may know what's beautiful for him, but society may not see for some time. I mean, most people probably looked at Van Gogh's paintings and thought these are the most hideous, ugly things that have ever been made by any artist, and this guy should just give up. You know, I mean, many, many people that knew what beauty was and what art was all about in 1890 probably saw some of those paintings and thought that very thing, thought this is worthless, it's ugly.
Well, they said that about all of those, Cézanne,
right.
Monet,
and but
Matisse,
today,
everyone.
The common man, the everyday person, looks at these works of art and thinks that they're the most beautiful things. Mm. In fact, they're the most valuable works of today.
Well, in a show that we did like some time ago, I remember we were talking about people who take photographs of things, like Diane Arbus, for example, she's a pretty well-known example of that, but there are a lot of photographers who have focused on portraying people who were really old and wrinkled or, you know, not considered beautiful in the classic sense, and you look at those photographs and you fall in love with those people. You really do feel that same response that we've just been talking about in the last couple of shows of love and beauty, and that's a boundary breaker too that I think it's important for artists to make, to take people's attention away from the sort of commercial standards of beauty that the fashion industry and other aspects of society promote, to make us think that beauty can be defined so narrowly.
Yeah, I guess one aspect of beauty is pretty. Mm. And pretty means appealing in a very general sense to a vast number of people without necessarily moving them, but just, you know, being appealing in a vague sort of way. And, you know, another direction of the way an artist thinks about the work is what you might call the existential value of the art, as opposed to the content value. And, you know, you can paint a picture of a still life and all you're doing is saying, look, period. There's nothing else to be said. Or you can do a still life, you know, with a popsicle wrapper crumpled up in the background, and now you've got a message in there along with the existential aspect of it that's saying, think about this. These are flowers. That's trash. They're in the same picture. What does that tell you? And it doesn't necessarily have a translatable verbal, you know, caption type meaning, but clearly the artist is going in a different direction. And so is that more beautiful or less beautiful than a painting without the trash in the background? That has to do with, as we're saying, with your definition of what you mean by beauty. And beauty and value are, you know, kind of coexisting in some kind of strange subjective spectrum. Because we value things for innumerable reasons. And their visual appeal is one, but their subtlety is another, and their poignancy is another, and their you know, stimulating quality is another. And so looking at a picture of a person whose personality shows in their face, and their personality is fascinating and rich and deep and represents an entire lifetime of experience, you know, you don't even begin to categorize that image in terms of prettiness. It's irrelevant. You know, you're characterizing it in a whole different domain. And I think as humans, you know, we've got an uncountable number of those domains, and they all overlap, and they're all in utterly different, you know, directions and contexts. So there's no end to the way we can define beauty, and there's no end to the way that we can respond to an input. I mean, if you try and reduce it to the essence, you know, it becomes tautological very quickly. Any artist who does anything is doing it for some reason, and that reason is by some definition sufficient to, you know, represent his sense of beauty at that time, if in no other way than just the sense of satisfaction that he gets from doing it, even if it is just, you know, throwing a rotten egg at a wall. And he gets off on the fact that it smells bad because he's annoyed that day, and he hopes that people will come and see it and, you know, empathize with his annoyance, and it would make him feel better. And that's a kind of beauty for him in that strange little context. So in a sense, we're just saying that, you know, anything that anyone ever does has some amount of appeal to them, and therefore some amount of beauty, and therefore... But is that really reducing it to absurdity, or is that not also just saying that all experience is to some degree an expression of the impulse to find more satisfaction in the experience of being alive?
When you were talking, I was thinking, leaping over to another kind of relationship to beauty that might not seem beautiful to a lot of people, and how that can lead to an artistic impulse. And that has to do with weather. How my mother used to sometimes call me up on the phone and say, "Oh, it's a horrible day today. There's like thunderstorms all day." And I usually wouldn't say anything back to her, because if I did, I would say, "I love thunderstorms." And we would get into a kind of argument. "No, they're horrible," because we used to, when I was a child, get into these sorts of arguments. To her, a sunny day was a beautiful day, and a rainy day was a horrible day. And to me, a thunderstorm is one of the most beautiful things in all of creation, and I go stand in my open doorway and am awestruck by it. And very often, in that experience of looking out at the thunderstorm, within me will come an impulse to create something that represents the feeling I'm having at that moment in loving the whatever it is about the thunderstorm that I'm experiencing. And it's impossible for me to put it into a context, put it into words, you know, do justice to it. I will go up into my studio sometimes and try to paint the energy of what I'm feeling, but I never actually succeed in raising it to the level that I was experiencing when I was actually watching the work of art that was the thunderstorm itself. Even so, the experience of trying to do that in the studio, no matter what the end product happens to be, can be very blissful and expansive and wonderful.
But I think that's the quest of the artist, is to try to put into some kind of form, whether it's writing or poetry or visual art or a dance or something, how they feel about whatever it is they find beautiful. And part of the challenge is to get the people that hate thunderstorms to maybe possibly like them or understand how you feel about them, and there be some transformation about that. I think that there's kind of a triumvirate thing going on here between the witness value and the ascending forces and the descending forces. When you talk about it all being, you know, just what it is, and it's all good in the sense of it, everything that's happening in the universe has its purpose and place, and it's just fine. But then I do think that some people are sort of like ascending towards a heaven world, and some people are descending towards a negative place of separation. And the person that closes off the thunderstorm is closing themselves off. So everybody sort of makes their own boat. And in many ways, it's kind of like, where do you want to sit in this thing, and which way are you going? And how are you going to, every act and every thought that that people perform in the creative act of moving forward in time takes the universe one way or another. And it's sort of like, which way are you going to go? It's all a game. It really doesn't matter, because these forces are going to be at play eternally. But so where do you want to sit in this story? And if you kind of take a certain direction towards creativity, and we emphasize this beauty and love thing and the light and heaven sort of side of the story, you're going to find yourself more in that place, and you're going to bring everything in that direction that's your point in the universe. Or it can go the other way. So it just really doesn't matter.
I guess the ultimate manifestation of free will is the choice of where to turn your attention. And that maybe that's the only free will we really have. That's another question. But in any case, that does. That seems to survive, you know, even the most existential analysis. You still have the choice of whether to look on the positive side or look on the negative side, the choice to enjoy or not enjoy. And that choice is there most of the time, possibly all the time, but at least, you know, most of the time.
And what you find when you do live that way and you find the beauty in thunderstorms or anything, or a little quirky, unexpected delays, or, you know, anything that happens to you, you see this sort of pattern of life and how it's always weaving together with all the other aspects of life. And if you can see that as a beautiful, continual play or dance of life, another higher quality, I think, of love begins to develop, which is reverence, where you feel, you kind of see the divine beauty in the whole play of everything, and it's a very connecting experience, reverence, and it also cultivates automatically the tendency to take great care with whatever you're doing, whether you're painting or preparing a meal or cleaning your house or whatever. There's a kind of this feeling of reverence for life itself that then turns everything, every act you do, into a work of art. And
so I think this is that thing that we got started on in the last show when I was talking about feeling like I'm in love with everything. Yeah. I think it's this thing you just described that I'm feeling, and I'm calling it being in love, or it's the flow of love. And it's a desirable thing. I would much rather be in this place than in a place where I'm feeling pinched and hateful and everything's an irritation. And, you know, it's like good and bad. They both are valuable, I mean, to the universe. But I would probably rather sit in a place that feels like we just described, and it's laudable and a direction to take. And who knows how we got here? I mean, when you get into a place, like this feeling I've been having, I didn't get myself there. Somehow, it's happening more for me, that state. But on this free will thing, I'm a big free will person, even though we may not have much control of the matter. I feel that artists have that choice. We can have art of the ugly and art of the hate and all of this on the wall, because there's going to be art. There's going to be these things on the wall and people making statements based on wherever they're sitting in this story we've just been describing. But if the creative people who are creating the culture and creating the villages and creating the businesses and creating the art that's influencing people's thinking are choosing that direction, you're choosing to place the attention on
this more expanded direction.
In this more expanded place, then they'll draw people that way. So it's a very high responsibility, actually.
And I think one reason, you said you didn't know why it was happening to you now, hadn't tried. I think one reason it's happening to us now, and a lot of people our age now, is the aging process itself. There are different ways of relating to the aging process. Some people get terrified of it and kind of shut down. But I think a lot of people in our generation are experiencing just the opposite, where all of a sudden we feel a kind of greater freedom in becoming an older person, reaching 60 years old, and almost feeling like, hey, what's the point of holding back now? You know, all of these games I've been playing and, you know, little ego things that I've been trying to establish all these years seem kind of meaningless when you reach a certain age and you just feel like, I just have to open up to what my heart wants in life. And then it leads us in this direction that you've been describing. And as the more we find those experiences happening spontaneously, the more we realize I can't go back to the way that I used to live before. It just has to keep growing.
Mm-hmm. So there's something about this cyclical pattern that we're witnessing, that each one of watching myself as that 16-year-old youth, or that 5-year-old, or myself as a 30-year-old, myself as a 40-year-old, it's I being the higher I, doing what the I's do in the cycle of life. And, you know, when you're 60 and all, you see, or 70, you find these adults that have come to some level understanding and maturity. What do? You see them out in their gardens. And you see these guys fighting at 18, you know, over something, you know, and showing off their egos and their selfhood and their small selfhood and all of this. It's just like a pretty divine play we're part of.
And you can even look back with fondness on those old obnoxious selves that we've been at various stages. It's like when you read I used to read my old journals that I wrote when I was 20 years old and everything, and feel like just burning them in the fireplace because they were so embarrassing. I didn't want anybody else to ever possibly
think I was like that. That's because your ego was still very much involved.
But now the ones that I actually did throw in the fireplace, I really wish I still had, because the ones that I do still have, it's like this tender being that used to be what I thought of as me, and I look back on it, as ridiculous as it was, there's a fondness because that did have a place in my growth. And it gives, I think, all of the stupidity that we experienced in our own pasts gives us more compassion for other people's experiences that may be different from ours now. And that's another aspect of love, is being able to not feel condescending or superior toward people who aren't having the same kind of expanded experiences we are, because everybody's just in the play in wherever they are.
Well, you look at an 18-year-old doing, if you can go back and take the attention back to being all these stages of viewpoint on life, and then you see an 18-year-old performing like an 18-year-old, you don't blame them for being an 18-year-old.
Right.
You just think there's where the attention is at that time.
And I've found too, interestingly, that I don't have to take on the role of an advisor toward people. You know, there was a certain point in my life where I felt like telling everybody where it was at, you know, it's like correcting them if they were ignorant in my eyes, and I find that now it's much more important to honor people and accept them for who they are and just be as expanded as I'm feeling to be, and by that people get something from. They see that. They see whatever we can radiate from our hearts to other people of appreciation and honor and love and reverence and all of that, is giving them a lot more support in life, I think, than advice and trying to correct their viewpoint, which is a pretty common human habit.
And I look at art differently now, too. I don't look for there's a lot of youth dominating the New York art scene. and youthful outlooks and the level of seeing life and values in art that are based on the values that people have at 20 and 30 years old. This is kind of like celebrated in art in New York. So when I look at artwork by 20-year-olds or 30-year-olds or 40-year-olds, I have to take into account that the world reality of that age group is in here. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking for universal values that sort of transcend that in the work, because that's going to be in there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you do have people of all ages that have more of a universal glimpse or more of a mature outlook on life that they bring into their work. And those are those elements of value, I think, when it tends to transcend the particular of that particular sort of like group consciousness or age level of reality structure.
Yeah, because there's a lot of young people that astonish me these days, because they may on the surface seem like a typical 20-year-old, and you know, we can't quite get what they're doing or why their art is that way. But if you get to know them and have a conversation with them, you discover that there's some immense expanded vision that they have that's completely different from the expanded vision that we had in the 60s at that age, or that we have now. And they're tapping in. They were born into a different generation, and they're just seeing a vision of life that's completely their own.
So, I got 1 minute left. Alan's going to finish this off with a very, very profound sentence here.
I don't have much profundity in me today. I'm still packing my old house and unpacking it in my new house.
How's the moving going?
I don't want to talk about it.
He loves it. It's beautiful. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I get to handle all of my stuff again and again.
Well, I mean, I think the whole big point of all of these, the last two shows, is that all of art is about all of life. And we can't, I mean, we can try talking about the artist in his studio, but in the context of love and beauty, once every time we start to do that, the whole conversation expands to all of life.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.